because I had known the part of it had taken my head off. So when I went to them,
Dorothy.
Well, I didn't know there's nothing I could tell them.
So the party asked you then to recruit them.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I came to them, I said, John and Bill, I've been told to recruit you into the party, but I don't think you ought to belong to the party. Now, if you say a word about this to anybody, I'll kill you.
Why didn't you think they should belong?
And I said, why don't you think? He said, we've been kind of wondering why you haven't. I said, I'll tell you why. If you belong to the party, you could only do what we are already doing. But you now, as you are thinking and everything, you're sympathetic to those ideas, you believe in them, you have access to people that we can't touch in your Shelley Club, in the other things that you belong to, the teachers' union. You can speak up and everything. And they were very close friends of that judge, I forget names, you know, now. He died not so very long ago, but he was a very wonderful guy. And for a judge to be that way, you know, he really, I don't think he ever joined the party, but he did everything for the party. I said, so you see, I am not one of those that just keep going saying that I agree with you. Mm. I want socialism. I want a change of this system. What you're doing will help because you are influencing people that we cannot influence. They haven't yet, are not prepared to go as far as that. So I would only be depriving us of greater help. And I think it would be despicable of me. But the party people don't understand this yet. They think the more numbers we have. But I don't think that just numbers mean anything. In your way, you are doing things that we can't do.
Well, Barbara, why couldn't they have continued to do it even if they were party members?
If they were party members and they were known as party members, they would have, we could do whatever they would have done then. And they did a lot of things for the North Koreans. Mm-hmm. They helped. They did wonderful things, you know. So John liked Dorothy so much, John. He was just a wonderful guy. And he had fallen heir to some money and everything. So he told Dorothy that he would put in his will that he would leave her quite a bit of money. She says, no, you know, John, I can't take anything for myself that has followed me for the party. And she was a fool to do it.
Now,
so he said, whatever I want to get to the party, Dorothy, I get to the party. But if I leave everything to you, it means for you and not for anything. And it made him very angry. So when the will was read, when the will was finally read, there was some woman there who tried to spoil it all together. They left me, to my surprise, $2,000, and Dorothy won. So I said, see, Dorothy, John was going to leave you $5,000. And when you said that, Anna Louise Strong was going to give Dorothy two little cottages that she had in Desert Hot Springs. And Dorothy said, you know, Anna Louise, I can't take anything for myself. It would have to be for the party. And everything, she said, well, but you know, the party didn't treat me any too well, and I don't want that. Mm-hmm. So she, Grace Nelson got them. I said, Dorothy, you know, isn't a time when ideas become stupid? And you were a fool. She said, well, if I had felt then like I feel now, I wouldn't have done it. Yeah.
Well,
so finally we got, if somebody, you know, tried to change her will, she would call me up every day. She was 93. She died. Mary Graham took care of her and her niece and everything. So she would call me up and say, what day is this? What dead month is this and everything? And she was almost 90 when she was still driving her car. She'd been the principal of the Hollywood High School, and her husband had been the principal of George Washington. Lorraine McCormick went there.
How did they react when you told them that you thought it was better for them not to join the party?
It created such a trust in me, and I never once asked them for money. Everybody was asking them for money, really bleeding them and all that. Never once did I ask them for money. And they said that when my husband reported, John gave him $50, and I said, don't take it, Pedro, you don't need it. He said, you keep quiet. In Bulgaria, they need it. so he took it. But that created a great, they trusted me in anything I can get. If they wanted to check on anything, they'd call me, come over and tell me, what about this? Because I had told them the truth that I had not wanted. There were others who evidently were trying to get them in the party.
Well, in other words, you think because of the eagerness with which the party recruited a lot of reformers.
Get in. And then we had some people that were in my group that he was an FBI man. Youngquist was his name, and his wife. They lived right around here, and we lived at that time on 65th Street. And he would recruit people, go down to Grand Central and pick up Negroes and say, look, I've got a lot of money and everything, but I belong to the Communist Party. So you ought to belong to the Communist Party. And he'd recruit them, so he'd bring them to the party meeting.
This was the agent himself who would recruit.
That's right. And, well, see, the only reason I began not questioning is he borrowed money from a lot of people and they were paid it back. A lot of the parties were given at their house, and yet never was there much money from it, you know. And I began to be very suspicious of them, because she was very active also in the International Labor Defense, you know, because the clothes that were given, the beautiful clothes, she got a first try at them, and she would bring them home. And then when I found in her closet that the clothes that the dog was following in, then, you know, they would take the leaflets. You know, of course, I became suspicious of them. And so when I went in the closet to hang up my coat, there I saw something that looked to me like leaflets. I wasn't sure, so I moved away the thing that was covered on the month coat. The leaflets that they had taken to distribute, there they were. They were never distributed. So I became very, very, and
now,
very...
Did you voice your suspicion?
Yes, I did. I went down at that time. Dr. Toshin was the head of the Communist Party in the security thing and everything. I went down and told him what I knew then. He said, listen, have you loaned them any money? I said, $10. I just couldn't help it. I was in the car with them and something happened. I don't remember what. They would come and take me anywhere I wanted to go. And I said, but I'm very suspicious of them. And he said, don't let them know when any meeting takes place. Now, they're going to be, you know, you'll get your money back, I think, because they'll want to curry favor with you. So they did. A few days later, they got back my money. And then they come and say, where's the next meeting? I said, oh, it's been delayed. It's been postponed because of the tensions and everything. I wouldn't tell them anything. I was the only one that got back my $10. But some of the guys who really had loaned them $100, you know. Well, if you see that they take the clothes that were given to the International Labor Union for the people who needed them. And here they were, they picked out the very best. And then they let the dog...
Well, do you think they were paid agents for a while?
Yes, I knew he was a... He said every Thursday, he said, the FBI meets. Now I said to Tashin, how would he know when the FBI meets? And then another thing, too, he did. He brought poetry over, pornographic. So if you can't get a man, get a carrot. You know, all searching, and Dorothy, I said to Dorothy, did you see what Herbert Youngspirit Christ? She said, Mama, this guy is a steel pigeon. He's no good. Anyone who would use this kind of stuff is no good. And then there was a young man who had been staying with him. He had tried to make him a pugilist. He had been one. And he became quite good friends with this young man. So they tried to accuse him of trying to, when they were gone for a few days, that he had been trying to break into the room where the 16-year-olds were all a lie and a fraud, because he didn't go along with what they were.
Was he actually in your Southwest section? Yes. Uh-huh.
Yes, she was.
And we laughed.
And Betty Willett, who is a lovely person whom I love, she was such a trusting person, you know, herself. She trusted them. And when I told her, but Betty, look this, she said, well, but look, we are too apt. If we're going to create suspicion amongst ourselves all the time, how can we function? If you have anything concrete, I said, don't you think that's concrete? She is not concrete enough. Because unfortunately, there's others who do some of those things.
Well, Bob,
but Betty is a person I would trust with my life. Hi. Do you know her?
I've met her once.
Oh, she and her mother. I met her father. He had been an old preacher, and when he had a socialist lecture, and they could have socialist. I met him at the Grand Central, where we go shopping for bargains. And I was passing out at that time, the Western Workers, uh-huh. People's World. So, and then I met the mother. And we became fast friends, all of us, you know. And there's another sister of hers who was a secretary in the People's World office. All of them fine people. Her mother was a marvelous person.
Was she in your Southwest section too?
At that time she was. And her husband, who is quite a bit younger than she is, you know, was one of them who directed it, you know, and everything. But now, see, Betty, she is a strange thing. She says, Betty, I would trust with my life, with everyone. And I just love her.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you see, and I said, Betty, look at the parties we give there. Look at how many people come, hundreds come, and there's never any money. And then they always have a lot of liquor, and I said, they imbibe a whole lot of it themselves. I said, where is the money from it? Where is the money from it? She said, well, I guess they just simply spend a lot. They allow some people to come who can't afford to pay. But she found excuses for them. It's strange, isn't it?
Well, Bob, but then in Lancaster and Youngquist were both section?
Yes.
Now, how many people total were in your section?
Well, of course, Lancaster was not at the same time that Youngquist. Lancaster was in much later than the Youngquist. The Youngquist were in years before.
The Youngquist was before the 50s.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh. And then, but Lancaster, in your section, there were how many people altogether in your section?
In the section, I don't know, but in my group, there was about 10 or 12.
And so out of the 10 or 12, one was an agent. Or was there another agent as well?
No, as far as I know, Lancaster was the only one in that group, and the Youngquists were the only ones that I knew were.
Oh.
You know, that's true.
How did this system work? You said you would go to and talk to, who was it, who was the head of the security?
Yes, that's a question.
How did that work?
He told me to be on guard against them, not to let them know that any meetings take place. See, now for instance, when I went with May Youngquist to distribute leaflets, she took one side of the street and I took the other. And then I had already become suspicious of them, you know. Only slightly suspicious, I found out that when she was still much faster than I would check on her then. Then I'd find she had thrown them all down in the gutter somewhere.
Well, Barbara, when was the security office set up?
Well, as far as I know, Dr. Tushin was there all the time.
Oh, from the 30s still?
Yes.
And how would it work? Someone who was a
partner. He was a dentist. Mm-hmm. And Dorothy knew him a whole lot better than I did, you know.
But
and
for instance, what would happen exactly? Someone who was in the party might get suspicious of someone, in other words.
Then they went and told him.
Then was he trying to investigate?
Yes, he would. Uh-huh. And he found out about the Youngquist. He said, the thing is that we did have some people also, you know, that came and reported to us. They found out that Youngquist was an FBI man and was a very pornographic guy, kind of a guy. And even the FBI that he belonged to didn't trust him too much, you know.
you had an agent in the FBI who reported him, in other words.
And you had a guy who at least would tell us about them. But especially, it wouldn't so much tell us, but would tell Kashin.
Oh, I see.
He's the one that had the...
So he had a connection with them.
Yeah.
I see.
Yeah.
And did this office function like up through the Smith Act period during the trials?
You see, his son was killed, the only son. His wife now, his divorced wife, is the in the bookstore, Clara, and the
professor.
She was his wife at that time, nevertheless. And the only son was killed in the war.
Uh-huh.
And when that boy died, he was a wonderful boy. Cushion died.
Oh.
He didn't live very long after that.
Well, was this idea of a security division kept up, though, or was it dropped then?
Well, I wonder now if there was someone there to take his place, but I can't even remember his name now. But Cushion was an honest guy.
Now, what would happen, for instance, with Lancaster? Would you didn't go to someone who liked to...
I did. I told him about Lancaster that I was suspicious of him because he was so willing to accept everything. I said, look, for anyone not to have qualms, you know, going down to the Pershing Square, the police are there and everything, not very many would accept that. They said, look, after all, I have a job, I can't do it, you know. Someone to get you and look us accept all of it. I could become very suspicious of him. And I went and spoke to those people who were prominent in the movement in our group. And I said, look, this Lancaster, I didn't trust him. Where's Barbara? Why? I said, look, he said, well, that just shows that he's so dedicated. I said, oh, don't tell me he's so dedicated. There are other people who are just as dedicated, but they're careful and wary and sad. Question, what is the result of being in prison where you can't do anything? Because it's no great thing to go to prison for anything. Anyway, see, like Dorothy the other day asked me what the song of Henry of George was in the IWW. And I said, in Chicago's deepest dungeons, for the ABU, remember you're out there for us while we're in here for you. So that was a different thing. They were there in there because of something that they had been doing something and everything. And so the ones outside were supposed to carry on and see that they got out too. You know. See, in the IWW, personally, I never found one stool pigeon.
Mm.
It's the same thing. Well, of course, I wasn't part of the movement either, but I knew quite a few of them. And Trina, I trusted every one of them. I never found one of them who was a stool pigeon. Never. Can't remember one in all of those years.
Well, Barbara, what kind of atmosphere was created?
There was an atmosphere of fear. There was an atmosphere. There's no question of them up here. See, for instance, when I found out my neighbor right here on the corner, his son belongs to a kind of a police group, and he told his father, see, the son is kind of religious, and we gave him a lift several times home, so although he doesn't believe in communism, he likes to, so he told his father to tell me, which would otherwise not have done, that they had days of listening to conversation two blocks away and everything, and they had ears of chicken. So they knew that they had a meeting, many things that we didn't want to rewrite. We'd write it out and not talk about it, you know. For instance, if they're a meeting place, we never articulate it. We wrote it.
And you have to keep the paper around.
That's right.
When was this beginning in the late 40s?
This was in the 50s.
It was after the Smith Act, it was during McCarthyism.
Yeah. Now,
but
so there was
fear in terms of both the police.
But
how about just the atmosphere of suspicion within your own group once it was obvious coming
out? Well, you see, that's the trouble. They said you shouldn't be so suspicious. Now, I'll tell you, there was a young black guy who I never would have believed. I've forgotten his name now. But afterward, he became a drunkard. The black guy, Walter Martin, that I knew, for years and years. He was staunch and a wonderful guy. And he was suspicious of this guy. So he went to Pettus Perry, who at that time was, you know, it was a funny thing that it was my daughter Frances who had recruited that Pettus Perry. She met this Negro who didn't know anything and talked to him. He was so insolent that he became, and then he became quite a Marxist. But he was the kind of lead in self-determination in the Black Belt. And he supported all the time. So although we were friends, I told him, Pettus, I just don't agree with you. Mm-hmm. He says, of course you don't because you're not black. Mm-hmm. I said, now don't say that. You know that isn't the reason. It's only the reason that I have talked to other black people and they want only to be, have all the privileges of the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and no more, no less. They don't want a separate Negro state. You may. And
then someone he pulled in turned out to be an agent then?
No, they never turned out to be an agent, but they were all so staunch about the Soviet Union that you were never could never be critical of anything that the Soviet Union did, you see. So it was a strange atmosphere. One of the things that I remember, Ella Louise Bloor, whom I knew very, very closely, she was the one like, Elizabeth Gurley Quinn wrote another thing, I like hotels. She didn't like to stay at people's homes because it became a meeting. And Ellery Brewer told me the same thing. She stayed one night at our house and she said, now don't begin to ask me questions about this or that. And she said, you know, I'm like Elizabeth, I like hotels because when I get through with a meeting, but you know, she was a little bit like Billy Sunday. She said, you stabbed on the working class, you know, very vehement and standing and everything. And, but she was an honest labor leader, you know.
Well, Barbara, what, if you were suspicious in terms of others in your group, even, what was the effect then on your behavior? How would you handle that?
Well, personally, I would be careful of the ones that I was suspicious of, but I would be the same if anything. And, the only thing that I wouldn't do is I wouldn't allow, when we had to go somewhere or distribute something, I wouldn't go with the one I was suspicious of. Because I knew I'd been trusting anyway, so and everything.
Now, how would you avoid, if you became suspicious of someone, how would you manage to avoid letting them know where meetings were? If they were right in the group and you would write out where your meeting was going?
I don't think I was that careful. I would just say, I wouldn't say you're a stupid general and everything. I would say, just say, what's the purpose of this that you're suggesting? What's the purpose of it? For what reason or anything?
So you were on guard that they didn't act in a sense of agent provocateurs?
Yes. I had to, because the others still trusted them and I didn't want to be, and especially a few of them that I did say to, look, we can't live in a officer of suspicion, or we won't have suspecting each other, or we won't be able to accomplish anything. Well, there was enough truth in that too, you know. But I still thought that although there's truth in it, it doesn't mean that you accept all of that, you know. And you see, especially about the Soviet, like Stalin, you couldn't, if you began to question the integrity of those murders and everything, you had to accept it all. You weren't out a lot of... But that I didn't agree with. I told you about Carol June, who's 11 years old.
Well, Barbara, I don't understand how the dynamics work. If you were saying that when you would have someone like Pettus Perry, who was so staunch, that you were reluctant to be critical, was that because people would then be suspicious of you, or...?
No, they would never be suspicious of me. They would be angry at that I was only attacking a black man, or that I was suspicious of that. That was, you know, very strong. You had to be very careful when you disagreed or argued with a black man.
Oh, I see.
And the funny thing is that I got along with most of the black people that we were friends. We were very close friends. And some of them were very wonderful people.
Barbara, during before we leave this whole period of McCarthyism and the whole repressive period, then in the early 50s, were there any other kinds of incidents that you recall or anything else that would be important to bring up about that period and some of your feelings about it?
Well, the only thing that I can recall is just like when about Korea, I didn't think the party put much trust in showing the connection between Dulles, MacArthur, and the government with Korea. They did do some of it, you know, but not enough, because I thought that was the very crux of it. You know, see, I thought they were too weak in it. And then, you see, Eden Foster, I told you, as a writer, he was dead. If you read his History of the Communist Party or his History of the Black People, mm-hmm. Now, Apthecker, whom I don't like, but who is a scholar, when he writes the History of the Black People, you know, he has researched, you know, but Foster was not very good at it. Now, Dorothy and Foster were pretty close friends, and Dorothy thought I was critical of Foster because I thought he was a fossil when he spoke. I told you then that. So those are the things that I thought that our leadership didn't amount to very much.
Well, but do you think that was because of the internal pressure, because of the McCarthy period, that they were, as a result, didn't have the kind of confidence and trust?
Well, there was some of that. There was some of that. I'll tell you, a young field worker who lived just a few blocks from here, and he was a dedicated communist, but the party had given him such to show the face of the party, come out openly in the union, so he lost everything. And he had had an accident. He had to wear a steel brace in his leg and everything. And he came over here and talked to Dorothy, telling how the FBI had visited him and everything, and how... and everything, and in the union, they were not, you know, they were anti-communist, you know, some of them even anti-socialist, so, but he had lost out and everything. So Dorothy had told him, he said, look, dear, nothing takes the place of common sense. What can I tell you except that you don't have to carry out every order that's given to you. You have to subject it to your own common sense and say, what good would it do? What can I accomplish there? And if you can't, why should you do it? Don't be a martyr. She says, you know, martyrs, you know, don't accomplish anything. Just as they say, look what you can do when you go to prison. You can't do anything when you're in prison. Try to stay out of prison. That's the only place you can be effective. So that's all I can tell you. You see the bitterness was eating into him. So finally... and his wife was never, she was a party member, but she really wanted to live like the bourgeoisie and everything, so she was never too strong about it. But he was really a very fine person. But he finally became so angry at the things that were happening to him in the union and everything that he quit the party and really became a dissident and a very embittered man.
How many of those people then... in effect became not just embittered themselves, but also, in effect, acted for the government?
Well, I don't know of any of them that, for instance, when my son was in Berkeley, they had the Social Problems Club, and there were two guys who were very close friends and everything, who were students, who were dedicated communists and everything. Years afterward, we read of one who was in the government, and he was from Yugoslavia, and another one who was in love with every one of my girls. And he loved music. The one, the mystery of life, you know, all that. And he was almost like a shadow. He'd come into the house, and before I'd know it, I'd come into the living room, and there he was sitting listening to music or something.
But that would be more a matter of those people, in effect, changing rather than coming in to begin with as agents.
Well, I don't think they really ever became agents, and I don't think they ever betrayed anything. I think they just took another job there. I'm sure that neither one of them ever became an agent or ever did anything, except that he was offered a good job because they had the training for it. They were both young guys and had the training for it. And when they were in the party, they were sometimes told to do something that were not very pleasant. For instance, for someone, I remember that my son had run in with one of them, the same Yugoslav guy that I said afterward worked for the government. Darcy was the chairman at that time, and they had been told to a guy who was a striker and everything to burn down his house. So I'm going out hurt about it. He said, that's outrageous. That isn't the way you say anything to me. Just absolutely. So this George, I've forgotten his name already, he said, you know, I have a good mind to just beat the hell out of you. He said, if you try, I'd call the police because you're a much bigger man than I am. You'd call the police? He said, that's right, you'd call the police. Because what are you but a scoundrel? Why did you want to beat me? Do you think it's a nice thing? Do you think that you get any further in the movement? And if you want to beat me, well then what kind of what shall I like you and be careful of your feelings? So.
it would seem to me that the whole atmosphere, both the fear of being continually under surveillance by the authorities, then the fear of within your own group.
You see, the funny thing is, Sherna, that in my neighborhood, everybody knew about my politics. Because I was the kind of a person at that time that I talked to all my neighbors and told them what was what, you know. Now I hardly know any of the neighbors, you know.
Well, Barbara, by this time, by the mid-50s, you were about 70 years old then. Did that slow you down at all in terms of your...
No, I wasn't. You know, in the 70s, I was still just as active as ever. I could still walk 5 miles at the end when I was 70.
When did you start
Well, not until after 85 did I. And even then I didn't. Well, a day before, when I was 88, I walked 6 or 8 blocks easy. And I was 80 when we had that big march from the tar pits clear to Santa Monica. You know?
The anti-war march?
Yes. Mm-hmm. And I walked it because it was without any trouble. It's only within the last 2 years.
Oh.
And especially that since I had that awful thing from that, whatever it was, flu or something.
I never
recovered from that.
When did you stop exhibiting the people's world?
Oh, well, that I had stopped, I think, at least 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I never liked to do it. You see, I never saw where the reading of the people's world could really make them understand the Christ struggle. It's true that, because I thought the Negro papers also published and most of the ones that we could read in terms of, but when I did go, I really was better than most of them.
Yeah, we talked about that last time.
You see, Sherna, I never went with anything that I hadn't read and didn't know something about. That's the one thing my reading, helped. So when I talked about something, I knew something about it. So I told them, you ought to know what a workers' paper is and why they print this in the paper. You get some of the things in the Sentinel, but you don't get all of this. Because in the Sentinel, it's geared only to this. Here it's going to gear you, not only you as a black man, but also as a worker.
So you kept distributing in WASP up to your 80?
I pretty close to 80, yes,
I did. And that was still your territory
the whole time? Well, it wasn't only WASP. We went sometimes. The only thing I didn't do is distribute in my own neighborhood.
Yeah, we talked about that.
That's right.
Well, Barbara, How long did you stay active in your particular, what was the name of your group?
The Southwest Group.
And how long did you remain active in that group?
I was active in that group until, I think, about 3 years ago.
You stopped going to the meetings then?
Well, I've stopped going to the meetings only about two years. Well, because for one thing, it's difficult to go. I walk and someone has to pick me up and everything. And most of the time I was quite dissident. I would question things, you know.
Well, I guess I wanted to ask you, if you could trace for me the that group, the kind of changes, because that, when you rejoined the party in 33, you went right into that group?
No. This was a different group. This was a group of I won't even say dedication, but almost bigoted in their things. That you must not. I told you about Ellery Gould. She says one thing we will not tolerate is criticism of the Soviet Union. Well, at that time the Soviet Union was under attack. At that time, that was in the 20s.
Mm-hmm.
That's a different thing altogether. But now the Soviet Union is on a par as a great nation with it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and we never attacked it, we just questioned why was this necessary.
Well, other people when did you join the Southwest section then? When was that?
The Southwest group here?
When was that again?
At least 10 years. At least 10 years.
Oh, so during the 50s, though,
I didn't join. I was just transferred when we moved into this neighborhood. And then, you see, then another thing, there's been a tremendous change. Because many of the people, when we first moved in here, we had comrades living all around us. You know, some a mile away, some are 6 blocks away, some a few blocks away. That's all gone now. So, you know, this party has dwindled now to a mere, just a mere fraction of what they used to be. See, the first ones who broke away en masse were the 22.
That was in the
50s, though. Yes. Mm-hmm. But, and really, then Celestek, you know, and Henry Steinberg, who was ardent, and Celestek was one of the guides of Marxists and everything. So,
what effect did that have on your group?
Dorothy was blasted because she kept her friendship with them. She said, they have not become enemies because they have not, they just don't feel the party now is a vehicle through which they can accomplish anything. But they're not enemies, and they're still my friends.
But in other words, rather than leading within your own group, say, to more questioning, it led to a tightening up?
Some evidently, you know, it did. Now, see, Mimi Sparks, who was a scholar and a Marxist. Did you read his book?
No, I didn't.
Would you like to?
I doubt if I had time.
Yeah. Well, I think you know most of the things. He said the nation, the international thing, the Marxism, and the nation. He was a brilliant guy, but he was a highly cultured guy. I never forget that when the war was over and we were going to a convention in New York, we stopped in Chicago for 2 hours. So he said that they had just brought over all the valuable paintings and art from Germany, and the museum was just about a half a block from the depot we were. Let's go. And I said to him, tell me, Nemi, buy most of these beautiful things all by the church people. He says, that's a funny thing for a communist to ask me. You ought to know the only one who could pay for it was either the church or the monarchy. There's nobody else. So they, of course, he who pays a fiddler calls the tune. So, of course, that's the one. So we saw the statue or the sculpture of Moses, and God, he's a human guy. I don't know what he really looks like, anyway. I don't know if there was a Moses. the Old Testament, sure enough, is partly historical. In the New Testament, it's a myth, pure and simple, like any of the myths. But the Old Testament does have it. So, Mimi, though, took an interest. He knew about music, he knew about art. he was really a cultured man, which every communist isn't, and everything. Now, he had the same questions the doctor had, you see. He would come here just the day before he died, the same day, as a matter of fact, in the afternoon he was here, and everything. And when you begin to question, you know, you don't act with the same thought. When I remember when the first, perhaps, 30 years in the party, I was so dedicated that there was nothing, no matter what the risk, you know, that I wouldn't undertake. And in Berkeley, I almost headquarters to see the, you know, even the post office, when they couldn't